Welcome to the Psych Pearls podcast with Psychiatric Times, the voice of psychiatry. With thoughtful insights into the world of mental health, this podcast provides timely clinical commentary and practical cutting-edge pearls for you and your practice. We hope you enjoy.
I'm Chris Aiken, the Mood Disorders Section Editor for Psychiatric Times and the Editor-in-Chief of the Carlatt Psychiatry Report.
And I'm Kelly Newsom, a psychiatric NP and the co-host of the Carlatt Psychiatry Podcast.
I have an unhealthy fear of certain medications, tricyclics, MAOIs, and lithium. All of these have a reputation for adverse effects that is, perhaps, unearned. In practice, I'm constantly surprised by how well-tolerated they turn out to be. In the case of lithium, that surprise has been confirmed both in medical research and patient surveys. When it comes to the side effects that matter most to patients, sedation, weight gain, and cognition, for example, the risk of sedation is only 1 in 16 to 1 in 27 on lithium, compared to 1 in 5 for many other mood stabilizers. But let's look beyond the clinical research. A few years ago, a Google company called Cure Together posted an online survey asking people with bipolar disorder what they found most helpful in their recovery. Over 3,000 responded, and only two medications made their top 10 list, lamotrigine and lithium. The rest of the top 10 were behavioral tools.
Let's read all 10 of them. 1. Regimented sleep. 2. Reducing alcohol. 3. Exercise. 4. Lamotrigine. 5. Sunlight. 6. Mindfulness. 7. Psychotherapy. 8. Self-tracking and journaling. 9. Reducing caffeine. And number 10. Lithium. Most of lithium's adverse effects are manageable, and in this podcast, we'll show you how to do it. To start with, titrate lithium slowly. Lithium's main benefits are in long-term prevention, so there's usually no reason to rush it, unless you are trying to help a manic patient stay out of the hospital. Start with 300 milligrams at night, and raise it by 300 milligrams every 5 to 7 days. Cut those numbers in half if the patient is frail, elderly, or is taking a medication like a thiazide diuretic that can raise lithium. The main reason people stop lithium in the early phase is nausea. A slow-release version will reduce that risk, as will taking the lithium after a meal or with a glass of milk. Most other adverse effects improve with slow release as well. It cuts their overall rate by about 50%, except one, diarrhea. Patients with diarrhea on lithium do better with instant-release lithium that gets in and out of their system faster. Common remedies for nausea, example, ondansetron, promethazine, ginger capsules, or diarrhea, example, loperamide, milk of magnesia, they're safe to take with lithium.
Another way to improve most side effects with lithium is just to lower the dose. For most patients, the optimal blood level for long-term prevention is 0.6, or somewhere in the range of 0.4 to 0.8. The same blood level is ideal for treating depression, whether active bipolar depression or unipolar depression. The only place where you'll need a high dose is in acute mania, where serum levels of 0.8 to 1.2 are usually necessary. Children need the same blood levels as adults, but the elderly are different. Aim for a serum level that's 30% the usual recommendation in patients over age 60, and then further personalize that level based on their response. The blood-brain barrier becomes more permeable as we age. That means more lithium gets into the older brain at lower serum levels. Conservative dosing in the elderly has another benefit because these patients are more sensitive to lithium side effects, particularly imbalance and tremor.
Tremor is one of the most common side effects with lithium, and it is very sensitive to the dose. The first step is to lower caffeine and, if possible, other tremor-promoting medications like bupropion, Wellbutrin, or atypical antipsychotics. Beta blockers help lithium tremor, and although propranolol is the most commonly used, there is research supporting other beta blockers like atenolol, metoprolol, and nadolol for lithium tremor. The average dose of propranolol is around 120 milligrams per day. Usually we start with instant-release propranolol and then change to the extended-release after figuring out how much they need. You may read that beta blockers interact with lithium, and this is true, but the interaction is minor. They usually raise its levels by about 20%.
Another option for tremor with dual benefits with lithium is nimodipine. This calcium channel blocker has good research for essential tremor and is used third line for mania and rapid cycling in bipolar disorder. Nimodipine is generally well tolerated, and a typical target dose is around 120 milligrams a day. If your patient doesn't want to add another medication and prefers natural remedies, there's high-dose vitamin B6. In doses from 900 to 1200 milligrams a day, vitamin B6 improved lithium-related tremor, and it may reduce adverse effects on antipsychotics as well. B6 has open-label data for akathisia and tardive dyskinesia. Although natural, high-dose B6 is not risk-free, and it can rarely cause a neuropathy, which usually resolves after discontinuation of the vitamin. It's hard to find B6 in a dose as high as you're going to need here, so I keep a list of products on my website at moodtreatmentcenter.com/products. It's under antidotes for side effects.
Weight gain is a side effect on most patients' minds when considering lithium, but the risk of significant weight gain is much lower than most patients expect. I start with some reassuring data. In a large meta-analysis, patients actually lost weight on lithium during the acute phase of treatment. Over the long term, however, weight gain is possible. About 1 in 3 patients will gain 4 to 10 pounds on lithium, and most of that weight gain occurs in the first few years of treatment. But the most important part of this education is to let your patient know that there is something they can do about it. Lithium will make them thirsty, so if they stick with water and avoid caloric beverages, they can lower that risk. And that includes avoiding diet soft drinks, which actually cause weight gain through indirect metabolic effects, even though they have no calories of their own. Another way to reduce weight gain is to optimize thyroid function on lithium. Beyond that, any reasonable approaches for weight loss can be used, such as diet, exercise, or medications like topiramate, 50 to 100 milligrams per day. Like most psych meds, lithium can cause sexual dysfunction. We know of one evidence-based remedy for this: aspirin, at least for men. In a randomized, double-blind trial of men with sexual dysfunction on lithium, aspirin 240 milligrams a day improved the problem.
Outside of that, we don't know of much specific evidence with lithium, but you can always use things like phosphodiesterase inhibitors, that's sildenafil, Viagra, tadalafil, and vardenafil, with lithium. Now we get to the most serious risk with lithium: renal insufficiency. Here's what I tell patients. As you age, your kidneys tend to slow down, and lithium can make them slow down even more in some people who take it long term. So we're going to monitor your kidneys, and we may need to stop lithium if we see this happening, because if we don't catch it, it could, very rarely, go on to kidney failure. There are at least 3 ways to protect against renal problems on lithium. First, give the entire dose at night. This strategy improved renal function in a few long-term comparison studies. Next, avoid toxic levels. High levels of lithium can kill kidney cells, and that may be why one large study found a direct correlation between the number of toxic episodes on lithium and renal problems. It also looked like the kidneys were spared in that study if the lithium levels were kept at or below 0.8. which is where you want it for maintenance anyway. Next, watch out for extreme polyuria and polydipsia. These are signs of nephrogenic diabetes insipidus, which is both an adverse effect of lithium and a risk factor for renal insufficiency. A laboratory test will reveal elevated sodium in the blood and very dilute urine in these cases. Check for urine osmolality, urine sodium, and a basic metabolic panel. Nephrogenic diabetes insipidus is a risk factor for future renal insufficiency, and there is some evidence that treating the syndrome may reduce the risk by preventing fibrotic changes in the kidneys. It can be treated, for example, with amiloride. Finally, if the serum creatinine starts to rise, lower the lithium to the lowest effective dose and check the creatinine more often. Consult a nephrologist if the serum creatinine rises to or above 1.5 milligrams per deciliter. Another medical risk with lithium is hypothyroidism. This is usually treatable with a thyroid supplement, and you don't need to stop the lithium just because the thyroid function goes down. If your patient does come off lithium, the hypothyroid will usually resolve, but not always, so you can gingerly try to taper off the thyroid supplement at that step while checking levels. Hypothyroidism might be worth addressing on lithium, even when it's subclinical, like still within the normal range, but the TSH is on the higher range of that. A controlled study from the Mayo Clinic found that patients on lithium were less likely to relapse into depression if their TSH was close to 2.4 microIUs per milliliter.
Lithium has several dermatologic risks. It can cause acne and psoriasis, and some patients report thinner, brittle hair on it, although overt hair loss is rare. Any standard treatments for acne can be used with lithium, but one to consider is minocycline. This antibiotic has neuroprotective and anti-inflammatory effects, and it may treat depression, according to a handful of small to medium-sized controlled trials in bipolar and unipolar depression. The dose of minocycline for depression is 200 milligrams per day. Lower doses are used for acne, example, 1 milligram per kilogram per day. If a patient is taking minocycline, I advise them to take a probiotic along with their antibiotic to avoid problems in the gut microbiome. Probiotics also have a growing evidence base in depression, anxiety, and bipolar, and there's some evidence that probiotics help acne. Psoriasis, those scaly, dry patches of skin that worsen in the winter and tend to show up on the elbows, knees, palms, face, or back, is another serious adverse effect with lithium. For this, I'll refer to a dermatologist, but I may suggest two CAM treatments that can help bipolar and psoriasis. In a few small trials, psoriasis improved with inositol, 6 grams per day, and high-dose omega-3 fatty acids, 4 to 6 grams per day, both of which are fairly risk-free and have small studies in bipolar depression.
Although lithium is a first-line treatment for bipolar that ranks high on the list of patient favorites, it has fallen out of general use, particularly in the U.S. When drugs meet that fate, they are often reserved for the most refractory patients, such as patients with severe mania who require high doses, and this doesn't exactly help lithium's reputation. Adverse effects should not stand in the way of its usage. When they are managed carefully, I have found it surprisingly tolerable. But still, about 1 in 10 patients I treat still don't tolerate it and have to stop the medication. On the other hand, about 1 in 3 bipolar patients respond very well to lithium, and these tend to be the patients with classic textbook case bipolar, the ones with euphoric manias that are clearly separated from the depressions, with low rates of rapid cycling, mixed states, and major psychiatric comorbidities. These need not be bipolar 1 patients, though. Patients with bipolar 2 can have classic hypomanias, and in one study, lithium actually worked better in bipolar 2 than bipolar 1. When lithium works well, its benefits tend to last. In recent large studies, it was one of the top medications for keeping patients out of the hospital, and its preventative effects have outshined other mood stabilizers like valproate in head-to-head trials. Lithium also has a few added benefits that are relevant to bipolar disorder. It prevents suicide, dementia, and some new evidence suggests that lithium may lower the risk of stroke and aid cardiac remodeling after a heart attack. That's good news if it holds up, because stroke is the number one cause of death in bipolar disorder, and cardiovascular disease tends to start about 20 years earlier in bipolar patients than it does in the general population.
I hope you'll join us again for more practical updates on Psych Pearls. And you can also catch us every Monday on the Carlac Psychiatry Podcast.